to another episode of the Trifecta Podcast. This is your host, Jack, and with me today are my two guests.
I'm Melissa, hello!
And I am Sean, also hello!
All right. I think it's been a couple of weeks since I last recorded an episode. We have a bunch queued up, but this one I think is going to be airing pretty soon after it's being recorded, so enjoy! For this episode, we have a very interesting topic, a very specific topic.
Mm-hmm.
We're covering something I've wanted to cover since I first thought of the idea for this podcast. 2007 threequels, so the third film within, like, a franchise. And there are definitely more than three 2007 threequels, and we did not go the most expected route with this. I think most people would think, okay, you have Spider-Man 3, Shrek the Third, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, you have Rush Hour 3, and you have Ocean's 13. So we went with Spider-Man 3, Shrek the Third, and Rush Hour 3. And I will say the main reason I chose Rush Hour 3 is because it has been an inside joke within, like, a friend group for such a long time, which is why I wanted Sean specifically to be on this episode. Will you explain this?
Okay, so basically, I was watching, like, one of those MTV music video things, and they had a song that was somehow related to Rush Hour 3. And in the, like, music video blurbs that they have, one of the blurbs just said, Rush Hour 3 takes place in Paris. And that was, like, a very captivating line to me.
That counts as a pop-up video fact?
Yeah, apparently. If you do, like, a quick Wikipedia search. So I just, like, went around that entire day saying, hey, did you know that Rush Hour 3 takes place in Paris? Turns out most people did not know that. Because I don't think anyone went to go see Rush Hour 3. So basically, I've just been saying, hey, did you know Rush Hour 3 takes place in Paris whenever there's an awkward silence in a conversation for about 7 years. Never got around to seeing the movie, but I at one point owned a shirt that was Rush Hour 3, and it had, like, Rush Hour 3, like, on it.
Oh.
But I had never seen the movie. I just thought it was, like, a funny thing to grasp onto. The shirt's too small now, though. I can't wear it anymore.
I love promotional shirts that are just the logo for the thing. When I was a kid, we went to visit my dad's cousin who worked for whatever the big local country music radio station was at the time. And she
Bowl.
Had, yeah, probably the Bowl. And she had all of these extra, like, promotional giveaway things, like, too many that could feasibly be given away. Like, we need to clean the office out. Let me give some to these children. And my brother and I both got giant, like, XL-sized bright blue Chalupas t-shirts to promote the new Chalupa. It's got the dog on the back.
I would think there's probably more value in a Chalupa shirt than a Rush Hour 3
I'd
t-shirt.
Wear one today. I'd wear one to my office.
You know, it took a long time to find a Rush Hour 3 t-shirt. You might be surprised, but there were not many made.
I wouldn't expect any to be made.
And it was not in a remotely fashionable color. It was like a really gross brown.
Oh, the worst.
But I had no choice because I really wanted a Rush Hour 3 t-shirt.
Where did you acquire this?
The internet.
I do have to ask, because this could have been a viable option at the time, was it eBay? Good. That was eBay. You can always find the most obscure things on eBay, as I'm told to this day, but I have not gone on eBay since, like, I had a dial-up
computer. Yeah, I won the bid.
Oh, I'm glad you did.
You were probably fighting against, like, Chris Tucker's proud dad.
Or his, like, third cousin. He just needs to remind people that he's Chris Tucker's cousin, so he, like, wears all of Chris Tucker's movies on his shirts.
He's like, I gotta take a break from all my Fifth Element merchandise.
I mean, I think he like, would wear the shirt around, and then when someone say, like, hey, why are you wearing a Rush Hour 2 t-shirt? He'd be like, oh, well, funny, you should ask. Just so happens that I share the same blood as one Christopher Tucker.
Oh my gosh, I love it. That was the main reason why I wanted Rush Hour 3 to be the third film that we watched, although after watching it, without getting too much into it before we see it, I kind of wish I'd have thought of Ocean's 13 at the time. I totally forgot it was a threequel until, like, a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been a bit more timely. But doing all the Ocean's movies might be more fun. And then doing a bonus episode on Ocean's 8, which is currently in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start with the background. I saw Spider-Man 3 and Shrek the Third in theaters. My feelings about both have changed quite a bit, which I will give you more information later on. But both of those franchises have definitely shaped me into the person I am today. I have a Shrek the Third glass behind me. I didn't pick it for the purposes of this podcast. I just drink out of that glass all the time. And Spider-Man 2 and Shrek 2 came out the same summer, like 3 years prior to this. And those were both very pivotal movies in shaping me as a person.
Yeah.
So it's crazy to think that we got two cinematic highs in the same year and then two cinematic lows following those movies. But yeah, that's my background. And Rush Hour 3, I did not watch until this particular podcast. But I remember seeing trailers for it and thinking, that might be funny.
I think that's what everyone thought.
Yeah.
When they saw the trailer for that movie. It's one of those movies that no one goes to see, but everyone, like, considers it a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll watch it, like, on a plane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll wait until Hulu gets it. Not even Netflix.
In the future, Hulu. They're going to invent this thing called Hulu.
Yeah. Hulu's going to get the Rush Hour movies.
I saw Spider-Man 3 in theaters. I think me and my dad and my brother had a real riot of a time. I wanted to see Shrek 3 in theaters because I saw the first two and I felt like I would be disloyal if I didn't see the third movie. Because this came out in 2007, as is the theme of this entire episode. And that was when I had a bunch of friends that were bailing on Lost and I wanted to keep watching Lost. And I'm like, this will just be my thing. I'm going to stick with every story. I'm like, I saw the first two Shreks. I have to see the third Shrek in theaters, just like on principle, and I didn't get to it. And I just saw it for the first time, like, a couple years ago, probably when I was hanging out with you. I think it took me a while. I also just watched Rush Hour 3 for the first time a couple weeks ago, and you and I watched it together, and it was quite a night.
It really was.
I saw none of these movies in theater. Because, quite frankly, I didn't have a high enough opinion about any of them to think it was worth it. I mean, Rush Hour 3 I didn't see until, like, literally 2 days ago. Especially after years of having it be a thing, I just kind of felt like I wanted to wait until, like, the last moment. Because I knew that whatever Rush Hour 3 was, it would disappoint me.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wanted to, like, love it for as long as I possibly could before beginning to hate it, which I now do.
Oh, man. I'm sorry.
Spider-Man 3 is kind of like, everyone knows Spider-Man 3 is a train wreck, but I kind of love it for its train wreckiness a little bit. I mean, I haven't seen any of these movies in theaters, so basically all my opinions on them are built out of, they're built out of watching them with friends or watching them alone for some reason. I don't know. I feel like my opinion on all these movies is very singular because I haven't talked about how I feel about any of them with anyone. Mm-hmm. So I'm almost kind of like afraid to say what I think because, you know, there might be snipers in here somewhere in a cabinet or what have you. I don't know. My thoughts on the background is pretty small.
It's okay. It's a small background. We can kind of get more in-depth when we talk about each one individually. So, with that, I'm going to go in order of when these films were released throughout the year. So, Spider-Man 3 was released on May 4th, 2007. I loved it when I first saw it in theaters. I laughed out loud at the part where Peter Parker strolls down the street dancing, and I angrily threw my water cup down on the ground when Mary Jane broke up with him. Because I spent 3 years so happy that those two were together. after Spider-Man 2, and then to have it just end within the middle of the movie that follows that, I was not having it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how flawed it was until later on in retrospect. I will say that some scenes still really hold up, like the Sandman CGI sequence is still, like, really good, really mm-hmm. moving, it's solid, but the film is just really tonally uneven. Like, you have Peter Parker in, like, his edgelord phase, and he's dancing at a jazz club, and it's just weird. I don't know what kind of... It's crazy, and there's just so many plots and side plots stuffed into this movie, and I forget about a lot of them. Like, I forget Gwen Stacy is there. I forget she's played by Bryce Dallas Howard.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the new Goblin is a part of this.
Oh, yeah.
I forget that Mary Jane has, like, a Broadway career that's ending. And, like, in this one, most of the actors seem ready to leave by this point, and they seem kind of checked out, and so it kind of just makes this movie feel like a cash grab rather than mm-hmm. people actually enjoy what they're doing, which... It makes me appreciate the Marvel Cinematic Universe even more, because even though by this point in time, a lot of actors are coming towards the ends of their contracts, none of them seem checked out. Like, they still seem invested in what they're doing, mm-hmm. where in Spider-Man 3, I don't think anyone actually cares that they're in this movie.
I'm sure Bruce Campbell cared.
That's true. I feel like he's an outlier, though. Like, Bruce Campbell is just always so enthusiastic mm-hmm. about everything he's doing. We should all strive to be like him.
Yeah.
I am Bruce Campbell. And then I, like, take, like, fucking zipper down.
Removes false chin to reveal real bigger chin. I also enjoyed Spider-Man 3 the first time I saw it, and I did not rewatch it in preparation for this, but I imagine I would also still enjoy it. The dance sequence, I love it for what it is. I love it the way I love, like, the Star Wars holiday special. Like, I adore the fact that this is a complete outlier to anything else that is happening. Like, I think it's so perfectly crafted for what it is. Like, okay, let's throw something really corny and shocking and bewildering at the audience. This is the best of what that could be. Like, you can't improve on it.
No, mm-hmm. you really can't.
It's a very strange masterstroke, but I think it's a masterstroke. And Tobey Maguire can really move.
The boy can't move.
And I think the backstory behind Spider-Man 3, as I have heard it, is that Sam Raimi did not want to do Venom. Like, you recognize that Venom was the big villain of the Spider-Man series after, like, Green Goblin. He's like, I never cared about Venom. I don't think Venom's interesting. I don't want to do Venom. And the studio's like, no, Venom's big. You have to do Venom. And he's like, fine, I'll shove Venom in there. And it was almost like an act of bitterness. Like, he made this movie in such a passive-aggressive move. I think I have heard this. I think that's the story behind why there's so many things going on in here, and that people, like, kept pushing him to put more stuff into the movie. He's like, fine, you want the stuff in the movie? I'll put the stuff in the movie. So that's why it's kind of all over the place, but... I don't know, Spider-Man 2 is so good. And, like, we have good Spider-Man now. We got Tom Holland now. Like, it doesn't matter to me if Spider-Man 3 is not good. Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm glad we have that out there as a legendary bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm glad it is what it is instead of actually being slightly better, which would make it mediocre or even very good.
Yeah.
Because Spider-Man 2 is the very good one, and I think that's plenty.
That's true. I think it is a much easier pill to swallow, knowing that we get dessert at the end, which is Precious Son, Tom
yes.
Holland. Which I shouldn't have compared him to a dessert. That's weird.
How young is he?
He's like
12, isn't he?
I mean, he's technically 22. I think he just recently had a birthday, but...
That's a lie.
He's just like a little precious child to me.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, he is, like, the treat. Like, the thing you've all been waiting for. You
yes.
wish you could have started the whole meal out with this. The meal, metaphorically, being a superhero movie franchise. This metaphor works.
The police are at the door, I think.
No! They'll never catch me alive!
I've had this running theory about Spider-Man 3.
Uh-huh.
I think you're right about the Venom thing. Mm-hmm. I think he really didn't want to put Venom in the movie. So I think in retaliation to him, to them making him put Venom in the movie, they casted Topher Grace as
yes.
Venom. That may be the worst casting choice I've ever seen in my entire life. Topher Grace is not a good villain in anything. Topher Grace has never been a good villain. I'm not sure he's ever been a good actor. Why Topher Grace? Why does he continue to get roles?
That was a really bewildering choice, in that he's too similar to Peter Parker already, but not so similar that it makes for a very neat parallel.
Exactly. I understand that Eddie Brock is a character that is in this universe, and he probably needs to be acknowledged at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Does he have to be this pathetic? Does he have to be this this gross? You know what I mean? Can't we find something about Eddie Brock that's like interesting? Does he have to be just like a lamer version of the already pretty lame Peter Parker?
Yeah.
Oh, he has sharp teeth now. Topher Grace with sharp teeth makes me want a like version of Shark Boy and Lava Girl where Topher Grace is like inserted into the movie where Taylor Lautner was that Taylor Lautner?
It's Taylor Lautner.
Oh my god. Where like Topher Grace's face is put over Taylor Lautner's, and then it's just lines from that 70s show like inserted into Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
I feel like you could do this. You could make a YouTube video.
Yeah.
We have the technology.
We do.
But to be honest, I've never hated Spider-Man 3 because I've never really cared whether it was good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very bold in like a very sassy way. It's not good, but it's bold.
Yes.
gone where no man has gone before in the superhero universe. I don't think I've ever thought it was bad. I just knew it was confusing. Like, even upon a first watch when I was younger and wasn't really aware of what good films were. Oh, I just used the word film.
Oh, I have a real quick side note for this.
Mm-hmm.
I specifically remember, so like 2007 was the first year that I had high-speed internet, and so I got really into like the hellscape of IMDb, like searching everything, looking up movies all the time, trolling the message boards, like all of that stuff. And I remember because I was learning so many things about movies that I had never actually been able to look up before, and now I could, that when I was watching Spider-Man 3 in the movie theater, I thought to myself, I'm watching a film. I specifically remember thinking that specific sentence, but I'm sorry. Go on with what you were saying.
I mean, you are most definitely watching a film, but I always wonder what it is that like makes the difference between calling a movie and calling it a film.
I was too young to know. I was just thinking everything's a film.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
If the text on screen has serifs, it's a film.
Yeah, that's a good test.
But yeah, Spider-Man 3 to me has always been a movie of like just shut up and enjoy the show. Like don't question anything. Don't like point out the obvious flaws in it. Just enjoy it. Sit back and and let this thing hit you like full force.
It looks good.
Yeah, it looks okay. CGI is actually not so great now that I think about it.
I remember the skyscraper fight being pretty exciting.
He
doesn't fight a skyscraper. What I mean is that like a big crane smashes through a skyscraper he's fighting along it.
Yeah, there's like that one fight where they're just kind of like falling the whole time, yet they never really like...
He kills Venom with a bell.
Yeah. I mean, there were so many plots in that movie. There were like 7 different like stories going on. It's like they had an H story. It's like A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Like, it just kept going on and on. I was like, I rewatched it for this. As I was going through, I was like, well, that's the last plot. Ah. No, that's the last plot. Oh, Sandman is also the dude that killed Ben? Okay. We all know it's not great. Mm-hmm. It's not one of AFI's top 100 films. So, we'll shut up and just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy that a lot.
And also, Topher Grace should never be in another movie as long as he's alive.
I have heard, which I haven't seen, Interstellar, but...
He's in it?
Yes, apparently he's in it. Oh. Apparently his plot is the plot that the movie does not need.
Oh!
Like, I was watching, I think it was a Watch Mojo video, and they were like, top 10 movie plots that movies didn't need. And the one with Topher Grace in Interstellar, apparently, was, like, number 3.
Maybe that's his thing. He's like, always the plot in a movie that is, like, one too many.
Yeah.
I do have to say, now that you've told me this, I am way more interested in watching Interstellar to find out how an unnecessary Topher Grace plot fits into that thing.
Oh, yeah,
now
for sure.
I need to know what this is.
It's a movie that's been on my need-to-watch list for, like, 4 years now.
We'll do a trifecta of movies that will make your head hurt, and we'll watch that, and Primer, and...
Inception?
The Prestige.
Oh, yeah, The Prestige.
Oh, yeah. We do, like, Christopher Nolan movies
mm-hmm.
that aren't Batman movies.
Yeah, like, there we go.
Yeah, there we go.
We can leave the office early. Let's go to the bar.
Moving into Shrek the Third, which was released on May 18th, I think I felt very similarly to you, Melissa. Mm-hmm. Like, by this point, it's not that I was still really into Shrek because the Shrekening hadn't happened yet. I was, like, about to be in middle school and everything, so I was getting to a point where I wasn't really watching that kind of fare anymore. I still felt like I had to see it because I had such a strong connection with the first two movies. So I see it, and I was very disappointed in the movie just by seeing it the first time. I was like, what is this shit? What is this shit? Are you shitting me? But I'm still not a huge fan of it, but there are a few scenes that I'll go out of my way to find on YouTube for a quick laugh. Like, the Ogre Baby Nightmare.
Yes.
Is legitimately one of the funniest movie scenes I have ever seen. And when I rewatched this movie a few years ago for the first time since I saw it in theaters, I was really pleasantly surprised with some of the scenes. Like, it has really good individual moments, mm-hmm. but, like, the parts are better than the sum of everything.
Yeah.
And I think also that Shrek Forever After may have made me appreciate this movie a bit more. And also there's, like, a lot of fun voice cameos. Like, Amy Poehler mm-hmm. is in it. John Krasinski's in it.
Yeah.
They're not in it for a lot, but it's nice to hear their voices.
Mm. Yeah. It's good to remember that John Krasinski can talk as much as he wants.
Yeah.
When there isn't a noise monster after him.
But yeah, I didn't write many notes on Shrek the Third. It was pretty easy.
Yeah, I wrote too many babies, dads for kids. This plot thread.
That sounds like a charity, by the way.
1-800 dads for kids. This plot thread, it makes sense. I will give them that. They went to the place that the Shrek character naturally needed to go. Like... Mm-hmm. He's broken out of his shell. He has learned to have a partner. He has learned to have an extended family and deal with a larger community. Now he is going to deal with being a father. Like, that's where he's supposed to go. And I'm like, it's such a weird choice for a kid's movie. But also I appreciate that it's a weird choice. They're like, yeah, this whole movie is just about learning to be a father. There are no actual kids in it.
Yeah.
They show up as babies at the end of the movie. Like, the target audience for this movie has nobody that is their own age for them to watch. There is no 7-year-old for the 7-year-old. They have to watch this crabby middle-aged man learn how to be a dad. And I appreciate it. I'm baffled and I appreciate it.
I mean, when the only person you can relate to in a movie or a film is like weird, like trying to play a teenager Justin Timberlake.
Yes.
Then you're probably like a little bit off the beaten path.
Mm-hmm.
See, the thing is, I don't hate Shrek 3.
No,
I never hated it.
It's not, like, I don't remember a lot of highlights from it. I don't, except for like the too many babies scene. I can't name the next like big laugh out loud moment, but the whole thing is overall just pleasant. Like, no, it's nice to see Shrek grow. It's just, it's like visiting an old friend.
Yeah.
It's pleasant in that way.
Yeah, I can't think there are a lot of moments in that movie that are, like, really cringy or anything like that. There isn't anything that's, like, really, like, obtruse and, like,
It doesn't get, like, too, like, weird and modern and edgy and hip. Like, there's nothing like that. There's no Spider-Man 3 dance scene equivalent in Shrek the Third.
Yeah, like, the closest I think it comes to that is there's this one scene where Shrek is, like, following Justin Timberlake. I didn't even bother to remember the character's name. It's just Justin Timberlake.
He's King Arthur?
Maybe. I'm sure he's King Arthur. But in my mind, he is King Justin Timberlake. He's like following Justin Timberlake. And
I'm glad you were moving your fingers in like little walking motions.
Anything for the podcast. Yeah. And Shrek starts to go on this weird thing where he keeps saying like, of the time, like, hip sayings.
Oh,
like, he's
yeah.
like, well, dude, if you're not in my grill.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Then get off my back, Jack, you know, stuff like that. That's my Shrek impression.
No, I can hear him in my head. It's a good illustration.
That's, like, the closest thing there is to a Spider-Man 3 moment in Shrek. And even then, it's so bad that I think they even knew it was bad. Like, I think they thought to have, like, the other characters being like, what is he doing like in the background because they knew how bad it was. I kind of like that wizard too.
Eric Idle.
Yeah.
Always good.
Yeah. I liked him in it. I think he was pretty annoying, but I don't know what else he was going to be.
I think one of my favorite bits is, this is so sad when the frog dad dies.
Yeah.
And the first time I saw the movie, I'm like, it's kind of, I don't know, kind of on point and kind of like unnecessarily too obvious for them to be playing Live and Let Die over the funeral scene. Like, I'm like, it's death related and it's a really big pop hit, but this is a weird song to put here. But I appreciate it now because John Cleese, the voice of Frog Dad King, was in a James Bond movie. He played Q in the Pierce Brosnan films of the 90s, and Live and Let Die is a James Bond theme. So, like, on that level, I like it.
That's great. I never even knew that.
I like that it's, like, a joke for me, somebody who just knows a lot of James Bond trivia and also watches Shrek.
Mm.
The middle of the Venn diagram is me, and now I appreciate this, where I could not appreciate it in 2007 or whenever I did watch this film for the first time.
I like that we're all calling it a film.
Oh, yeah. It's the fancy old-time font.
Shrek is just a very frustrating franchise to me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like in every movie, there is, like, gold. And in every movie, there is also brown. The exact
brown.
Same brown that Rush Hour t-shirt was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like Shrek 3 was, like, a respectable threequel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because with that every threequel, there's a little bit of, like, do we really need another one of these?
Mm-hmm.
In every single threequel, there's a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they found a way to at least almost justify the fact that they made a third one.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And I think we've also reached a very interesting time where we have so many film franchises that go well past a third film,
yeah.
and they kind of don't run out of steam. Like, they keep finding interesting stuff,
mm-hmm.
or they keep going in interesting directions. So it's interesting to see how film has changed and how it's become more episodic to the point where a third movie just feels like another episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, Avengers Infinity War is a threequel, but damn, if it isn't a great movie.
Yeah, it is entirely its own creation. Like,
yeah.
There's not really anything else you can compare that movie to.
No, and it's still the best movie I've seen this year. I've seen quite a few many movies, and I think it's going to take a lot to beat that one for me, just in terms of, like, my favorite film of this year so far. So, Rush Hour 3.
May God have mercy on our souls.
Yes. So, this was released on August 10th.
Very close together. Very close together.
These,
like, only a couple
movies.
Yeah.
I have an interesting backstory on Rush Hour 3. I was unaware that I had already seen a clip from this movie. The scene where they're in the Kung Fu studio and the very tall man is fighting Chris
Tucker. I have something to say about the very tall man.
Go ahead. So in my film editing class that I took this past spring, our final assignment was that we were given the green screen footage of Shia LaBeouf, the one where the Just Do It meme comes
from.
But the entire like 40 minute long thing that he does that's called hashtag introductions. We had to mine through this and create a video of our own where we, because he's standing up against a green screen, we can fit him into other footage.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to try to find like ways to fit him in other things. So like for my final, for example, I put him in scenes of The Office and he was like the scene with Prison Mike. I just put him in front of Michael Scott. We're saying, just do it. And then you have everyone's reactions and everything. Like that was my approach to it. But somebody took the clip for Rush Hour 3 and Shia LaBeouf doesn't say anything in this clip. They just put him as one of the students. So we just watched this entire scene for Rush Hour 3. It's not even like they had Shia LaBeouf saying anything. It's just the Rush Hour 3 scene with him green screen. Background. But when I saw it, I had assumed it was from the first movie or even the second because, like, the humor and it's really racist. And I was like, this seems more like late 90s racist humor, not mid 2000s. Boy, was I wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sorry, I have a lot of notes leading up to just the film itself.
This is an entire journey, and you need to take us through every step, because when else in your life are you going to talk about this?
That's true. When it came time for us to watch this film.
It's them. It is the film.
I'm going to let the phone continue to ring, because this actually fits really well. So, I knew that I was going to rent this movie, and I figured that getting it from a local video store would be the cheapest way. So, in the year 2018, I called Family Video on a landline phone to ask if they had Rush Hour 3. And it didn't dawn on me until I was writing my notes just how old-fashioned that sentence sounds. Like, that's what John Mulaney did to see if they had Adam's Family Values. So, I call Family Video to see if they have it, and the guy on the phone is like, oh man, I love that movie. Yeah, we have it. So I go up there, and it's the only Rush Hour they have. They don't have one or two, they just have three at the store. So I rent it, and I ask, well, I don't ask the other guy. The guy asked me if I had seen the other two, and I was like, thinking in my head, this is going to be way too long and embarrassing to reveal the nature of why I'm renting this movie, so I just shortened it to, oh, we're just marathoning them. Had the DVD rented, but the DVD did not work. By the time Melissa was over and we were watching this and the DVD was not working, then I figured, okay, well, I know it's a rental on Amazon, so I'll rent it from Amazon. And then the internet connection was not working. On the Roku, though, like not on DirecTV. So we rent it from DirecTV and it had a rent option and a buy option.
Yes, yes!
And I did not want to buy this movie, but that damn remote would not move past the buy option. It's the rent option. And I'm like staring at the screen, panicking and like screaming, no, I don't want to spend $13.99 on this movie.
A treasured soundbite in my memory now, just you very frantically saying, I do not want to purchase this!
I'm glad that you remember that.
This is like the most upset I've ever seen you, and it's just about, like, we have to watch Rush Hour 3. Like, you brought it on yourself.
Oh, yeah.
We were going through such lengths for something we knew would not be worth it, but we were determined to do it.
I know, we went through all that trouble for a mediocre film. So, on to the movie itself. I'm really glad it starts with Chris Tucker dancing, and it ends with the dynamic duo of Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan dancing to War, which, side note, I don't think that they hear the song. I don't think that the song is playing, yet they just look at each other and they start dancing to the song.
I didn't even put that together. What?
Like, there's no explanation for why they start dancing this specific song. The song is not playing in the background. It's not like they hear it over, like, the police intercom and think, hey, let's jam to this song.
Mm.
But I will say in general, I think all movies would be better if they had more dancing in them.
Yeah.
Like, every movie has end credits. Why can't every movie have, like, a dance scene?
The movie Hitch ends like that. And Hitch is, like, some of the most fun end of the movie scenes I have ever seen. I wish every movie would end like Hitch.
That makes me want to watch Hitch more. I remember, like, my mom watching it, and I was, like, in the room, but I think I was playing Pokemon on my
phone. Adult movies.
Yeah. But I'm glad to know that. I'll have to check out Hitch now. So there's
who would
have
thought that this podcast would turn into a sales for Hitch?
It's a Hitch pitch.
Yeah.
Hitch pitch. Loving it.
Hashtag Hitch pitch.
There's a scene where they fight in the hospital and there's basically like a shootout. But something that I am just so baffled by is like there is no staff around. Nobody is panicking.
Yeah.
And then when people show up after it ends, they don't seem upset or shocked or anything. I find that really confusing. That one scene which... Do you have a quote about the phone books? I won't ruin it for you if you wrote about the phone books.
I remember saying this, but I did not write it down. You were the one that actually put pen to paper so you can talk about this.
So there's a scene when Chan and Tucker land. I don't know their characters'
names. I think it's Tucker and Chan.
So there's this scene when they land in Paris and immediately these guys are like hitting them with phone books. And Melissa was like, you know, I remember hearing recently that phone books don't bruise. Where did I hear that from? And we're like, oh, it's Kid Gorgeous. One of Bitten Binder's tricks. So yeah, just a few other notes I have about this movie. So just to clarify, there's a lot of unnecessary sexualization in this movie, and I was not happy with it, especially considering like the director has been in the news a lot for being a sleaze bag. So I'm not cool with it. I recognize it. Like, don't listen to this thinking that I'm ignoring that. I'm well aware of it, and I'm not happy with it. Also, it's, like, very racist.
Yeah.
I think the only observation this film makes that is absolutely correct is when the cab driver says, I'm not American, I'll never know what it feels like to kill for no reason. That's spot on. Props to you for recognizing that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the action sequences, I will say, they're very creative. Like, there's a few moments that I particularly remember is when Jackie Chan sticks both of his legs in a glass table and then he flings the table back over his head. That was amazing. And like, Chris Tucker is in a chair and he like pops his butt so hard that he like breaks the chair and like sends someone flying across the room. And that's amazing. Like, that has stuck with me. A person who does not care for action sequences very much, and usually like their eyes glaze over during that part, I was very invested because they just did some crazy things in there. And the blooper reel is a lot of fun. I think the blooper reel has more humor than the movie itself does. Like when Chris Tucker says, well, hey, what about everything we went through Rush Hour 1? What about Rush Hour 2? And Jackie Chan has like his little child with him as he's running in a scene.
Oh yeah,
it's a lot of fun. I like the blooper reel a lot.
I was going to say earlier about the tall man, or that I teased earlier.
Yes.
Is this very tall man comes to fight them. It's not even a joke. It's just like, oh, we weren't expecting a man that tall, and look how big he is. How can we fight our way out of this one? Like, it's that plot point. And there's this bit where Chris Tucker looks up at him, and he just gasps, and then he just says, damn! And I would have expected an actual joke to go there, and no, it's just, damn! And I turn around to Jacqueline, and I'm like, did that also unsettle you? Like, it was like, when you think there's another step on the stairs and there isn't, to expect like, oh, this is so clearly a lead up to a joke line. And no, it isn't. Like, oh, I feel dizzy. Like, I need to lay down. It was really disorienting. There's another joke. This is also a Chris Tucker joke from this movie that I can't stop thinking about. It's, oh, he's talking to, I think, some villain at the end. I don't even remember most of the context of the scene. Mm-hmm. But he's talking about how, like, this guy is going to, like, live the rest of his life in prison. He's like, oh, you'll be, like, some old prison guy. And you'll just be, like, walking around the library, pushing the library cart. That's all you're going to do for the rest of your life. Your best friend is going to be a mouse, he shouts at this guy. And I'm like, I don't understand what you're referring to. Like, I don't know if this is a reference point, if this is something other people are going to understand, but you say this, and it does make sense to me somehow. Like, old man pushing a cart around a library in a prison whose best friend is a mouse, like...
I'd go see that.
Yeah, like, there's... I don't understand where it comes from.
Rush Hour 4.
But it feels real somehow, and I don't... Like, there's so many baffling little bits in this movie. Like, at one point, Chris Tucker, like, he escapes danger, and he says, like, oh, my full... And he says, my whole life flashed before my eyes. And he's like, I was married, and I had this family. And, like, he's describing the future and not the past. And it's not a joke they dwell on. He's not even, like, saying it that loudly. He's, like, mumbling this while he's moving around. It's just a really weird turn that nobody pays any attention to. And, like, all of these things, like, I don't know if these are good, but they're just baffling in a way that has stuck with me in, like, the week and a half since I have seen this film. Like, what was that? What was that one joke?
I think my problem with Rush Hour 3 is that in a movie that's supposed to be, like, action-packed and, like, fun and thrilling and funny, I can only, really remember, like, one scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the master scene, the karate scene. That's the only thing that I, like, really remember from this movie. Everything else is, like, a little bit hazy.
Yeah.
I really don't love Chris Tucker in this. He's just kind of, like, he feels a little hokey. Like, he might have felt hokey then. He definitely feels hokey now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of hard to dislike Jackie Chan in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of, like, not surprised that I like him in this. I can't really think of a time where I, like, disliked Jackie Chan in a movie.
No.
Nope.
I mean, maybe he hasn't always picked the greatest movies to be in, but he's probably the only part about this movie that feels, like, anchored in any sort of way to me.
Yes!
Like, everything else just feels like it's going off in all these directions,
mm-hmm.
and Jackie Chan is just in the middle. But that's what his character's supposed to be. So it's like, is that even, like, a compliment to Jackie Chan, or is that just him doing what he's supposed to do? Chris Tucker makes me cringe many times in this movie. None more than the scene when he's, like, walking into that dressing room with all the girls.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even remember what happens
after that. They're all so gullible. Like, okay, you're the new costume designer and you need us to take our clothes off.
Yeah, he's the costume designer.
So we can put new costumes on? Absolutely, sir. There's 20 of us and we all believe the exact same thing at the same time.
None of us question your expertise. I do like the karate scene. Not gonna lie. I do like it. It for much the same reason that I enjoy Tobey Maguire getting his jazz on. Because it's a really big swing and it's kind of a miss, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I kind of enjoy how much of a miss it is. Like, Chris Tucker doesn't really say anything funny in that scene, and Jackie Chan, I think he loses the fight, too. Like, they don't even, like, win in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
They just, like, get their asses handed to them while all these, like, small children watch.
Yeah.
And Shia LaBeouf. I really did not love this movie, like, even a little bit. Like, it's very easy to dislike.
I think one thing about it that impressed me in a very small way, which is when they go to that burlesque show, and it's so contrived that they have to be there in the first place, but, like, there's actual work put into the show itself. Like, it's not just ladies in skimpy clothes prancing around. There's, like, oh, you got, like, real performers and, like, really choreographed something, and this is, like, a background. Like, you're not supposed to be watching the burlesque show, but they still put effort into what it was supposed to be, and it felt like a real burlesque show and not like a movie, like, sparkly things, boobs, it's plenty, you know, we don't need to go that far into it. Like, this felt like a thing I could actually see. It felt authentic. You're like, oh, you didn't have to do that, and you did. So sometimes stuff like that is kind of nice. And then also, like, then Jackie Chan, like, swings down from the ceiling on, like, a legitimate swing that, like, a songstress would be on. It's not out of nowhere. There just comes Jackie Chan, and that was pretty magical.
So the things that you weren't meant to pay attention to are great.
Yeah. Oh, also, there's that cab driver, and they go to his apartment, and they're all having this, like, meeting around his table, like, okay, what are we going to do to fight these bad guys? And in the middle of the table, not focused on, just in the middle of, like, 30 other little props on this table, all of the set dressing, is just a big kettle that's shaped like a soccer ball? Or it's a football. We are in Europe. But yeah, it's
Paris.
It's so... Do you know this movie takes place in Paris?
I did not!
I just learned this from somebody.
Man, I wonder who has told you that.
Like, again, it's like there's no reason you had to go this specific with this thing that doesn't matter, but you did?
Mm-hmm.
For every time there's supposed to be a joke about how big the guy is and you just say, damn, there's like, okay, we need to get like a dance captain in here to plot this burlesque scene. And also, let's go find a really cute kettle to put on the kitchen table.
I just imagine like the prop guy being like, they're really on my ass about the freaking kettle.
Yeah, it almost makes you wonder if they put enough effort into these small things.
Yeah.
How did they, like, were they just being lazy with the overall film?
I wouldn't even say Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan's chemistry is that great.
Yeah, like, that's something else very interesting.
Like, it's weird that they thought to put them together because, like, there really isn't, like, a whole lot of movie magic happening there. Like, I mean, they're playing off each other, but, like, it's not really a whole lot more than, like, Chris Tucker says something abrasive, Jackie Chan says, like, sorry to the guy, and then punches him. Like, that's what the whole franchise is.
Yeah, like, it's crazy to think they made three of them.
And we only got two of the Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Nights franchise, which... Having only seen the second one of those and the third one of these, I think that's the stronger one.
Let me also say that Rush Hour 3 is not a film. It's a movie.
It's a movie.
Yeah.
It's a movie.
I didn't see one, Sarah.
Moving into the ranking, I think my ranking really works with our discussion on whether these are movies or films. So, my number 3 was Rush Hour 3. Simply because it's already just like a pretty generic movie and it just has not aged well due to way too many problematic elements. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel kind of gross even watching this in 2018, but I was so intrigued just because this has been a joke for so long that it just felt like I couldn't not watch it.
Yeah. I also put it at number 3. It is wholly unremarkable, except for these tiny little bits that, like, they've stuck with me in a week and a half, but, like, a month from now, I probably will not still be thinking about them. If you need to know anything about this, I guess maybe Google the karate school and Google, like, the burlesque show, but... Or you could just go see one of those live in your own town. I mean, a burlesque show. Don't go and live watch somebody's karate class. I don't think you're invited to that.
Yeah, I also put it as number 3 because it's just a bad movie. Nothing to say about it. Not even a bad film. Bad movie. Bad movie. I'm sure they tried their best. No, they probably didn't try their best. They probably gave it a solid 60%.
Yeah.
Really, I can't say a whole lot good about it. Every now and then it made me laugh, but even when it made me laugh, it was kind of one of those laughs where I felt like I was tricked.
Yeah, like somebody just... Like, it's just timed right, and something about, like, the physics of the thing just, like, prompts, like, a surprise laugh out of you.
Yes. Like, it felt involuntary. I did not want to give up myself for this movie.
My number 2 is Spider-Man 3, because I think a few of the individual elements work, and the movie is damn entertaining to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a movie. It's not a film. Therefore, it is number 2.
I put Shrek the Third at number 2. There are individual things that are really great. Like, Too Many Babies is legendary. And, like, when Shrek, like, wakes up from the nightmare and there's Donkey with, an ogre baby head, it's haunting.
Yes! Okay, really quick side note. I have that photo saved on my phone.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I couldn't just find it. I had to watch the video on YouTube on my phone and take a screenshot of the perfect moment. And my background, like, my wallpaper for my phone since 2014 has been Baby Groot. I have had three phones, and all of them have had a different photo of Baby Groot. But it's been Baby Groot. And I've never changed it, and at this point, I never will.
Mm-hmm.
But for a very brief time, I considered changing it to Ogre Donkey. But, like, I can't do that now.
Mm-hmm.
And I never will. But that was something I considered for a hot second.
Mm-hmm.
Choosing between these last two movies, like who's getting two and who's getting one, was very difficult for me. Because I feel like they both have a lot of the same good qualities and bad qualities.
Mm-hmm.
They're both movies that are like... Actually, no, I take that back. Because I was about to say that they weren't really necessary. But Spider-Man 3 was kind of necessary. Mm-hmm. It just didn't follow up to its expectations.
Yeah.
Shrek 3 was not necessary at all. And no one was really clamoring for it, but we got it anyway. I'm putting it at number two, despite what I think is maybe one of the highlights of the entire franchise, is this tiny moment where they're in, like the high school setting, and in the background, they're playing All-Star as, like, the marching band song.
I've never caught this before.
If you go, like, go to the high school scene, they're playing All-Star as the marching band song.
Wow.
Easter eggs.
Ooh.
I know, So in spite of that, I still feel like Shrek has to be number two for me because I find there to be moments of it where it's just very boring. And when a movie that didn't need to exist is boring, that I can't really overlook that. Like, if you're going to make a movie that doesn't need to exist, it needs to be damn entertaining. And Shrek 3 just isn't that entertaining. It has moments, but it's just not that.
I was surprised by my number one pick, Shrek the Third. I can't believe I ranked it as number one, but I think it's the least bad.
This is Mike Myers calling you to say thanks.
Yeah. And it has the most redeemable qualities overall, and it fits into our conversation. It's a film. The serif font. It's a film. That's the thing. None of these movies are great, so it's really hard trying to rank them in the first place.
We will have to do a list of, like, threequels that are legitimately pretty great, like Return of the King, others. I put Spider-Man 3 at number one because while Shrek the Third is very pleasant, like I said, it just feels like a nice visit to family. Spider-Man 3 leaves me going like, what? Which is the emotion I will always take ahead of anything else. I love just like cackling bafflement as like my core emotion. Like if I was an Inside Out, that'd be my lead emotion, like happiness, cackling bafflement, Phyllis Smith, all of them. Yeah, it's the most memorable out of the three of these, and I feel like it will continue to be the most memorable. Like, decades from now, people will be like, okay, kids, sit down. We're going to watch Spider-Man 3 tonight.
I am very much with you.
Mm-hmm.
I ranked Spider-Man 3 as my number one also, just because of how much of a beautiful mess it is.
Yes.
My God. if this movie doesn't make you want to make a bad movie yourself, I don't know what will. Like, I don't consider myself a masochist. Like, I don't consider myself someone who likes to watch bad movies just because they're bad. But I have so many good memories of watching Spider-Man 3 with people and just, like, kicking the living shit out of it. Just, it's such a fun movie to make fun of.
Mm-hmm.
For Topher Grace, for the dance scene. By the way, is the dance scene actually soundtrack to the Bee Gees, or is that, like, in my head?
No.
Yeah.
It's like a James Brown song or a Marvin Gaye. One of the two.
Yeah, because in my head, now that you say that, I also, like,
I always imagined it as Staying Alive. And I thought it was not. But It just feels like something that was, like, made to stay in alive. Like, they even literally have the scene of him, like, walking down the street.
With, like, mm-hmm. the point.
Yeah, it's so blatant. Like, could they just not get the rights to it?
Yeah, it's a James Brown song. But someone put, that song was Staying Alive by the Bee Gees.
Thanks, Yahoo Answers.
And Yahoo Answers said it was one decade ago, which is really messing with my mind.
Can you ever, have you ever seen, like, a recent Yahoo Answers?
I've only heard them read to me by Griffin McElroy.
Yeah.
But,
oh my gosh.
But yeah, this movie is just really, really bad, but it is just so fun, I can't help but love it.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was just going to say, I also feel like it is the most 2007 out of all of them. It feels like it belongs the most in that year. And, like, dancing Peter Parker with, like, his bangs, like, his black hair and his bangs over one eye was, like, the look of the time. And I think it acts the best as a time capsule. That's my parting note.
Truth be told, that's probably why it's, like, a movie that I'm like, ugh, I don't want to watch. Painful year. Where Shrek the Third just feels like it could just be any early 2000s.
Timeless.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this has been another episode of the Trifecta Podcast. Hope you've enjoyed this discussion.